What's up, everybody? It's the Q&A show back again for another week. Jason Avant speaking to you guys. Also here with my main man, Quentin Michael. Say what's up to the people.
What's up, everybody? How you doing? Another day, another episode. Excited. Let's get it going.
Let's get it going. Again, we want to thank you guys for making our show successful. To all the fans that love Inside the Birds, we had people comment from Sweden, all types, Louisville, Kentucky, all over the world. So we just want to say thank you guys for tuning in to us. You're making our show a hit. Make sure to check us out every Wednesday at 6 a.m. Inside the Birds platform. Also, email your questions to insidethebirds@gmail.com, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, wherever Inside the Birds are, the Q&A show will be there. So thank you guys again. And let's jump right into it. No, before we jump into it, thanks to my man Jeff, my man Adam, Hunter in the background, everyone that's responsible, Josh, and everyone that's a part of this show. But we're excited about the topics today, and we're also excited about some of the questions that you guys had. We're going to get to some of those questions that we didn't get to last week, and make sure that you're continuing to email your questions, Instagram them, whatever it may be, direct message us. Let's get those questions in so we can be great. Yeah. All right, let me stop. Here we go. So, Key, we're going to start off tonight, and we're going to talk about Julio Jones. Third week, we're going to talk about Julio Jones. Julio Jones goes to the Tennessee Titans. What they had to give up was a second-round pick, a fourth-round pick, and a sixth-round pick. 2022-2023. So, do you think that was too much for Julio at age 32? What do you think?
No, I don't. You know, it was a lot. It's a lot. And it kind of depends on the team. I think the Titans are at a position where it's not too much. They're ready to win now. If that's the Eagles organization, the situation that we're in now, kind of starting from scratch, that probably would have been too much to give away. Especially when, you know, we're in a rebuilding area. We're in the rebuilding phase right now. And, you know, I guess they don't want to say rebuilding. I guess what the
that's term not the is. Proper term.
Retooling, right? Yeah. Or reloading. But fact of the matter is it's rebuilding.
It's so rebuilding.
I think that would have been a lot to give up. What do you think?
I think that a second, a fourth, and the sixth was not the problem because the Eagles have a boatload of draft picks, right? They have a lot of draft capital. I think it's his contract.
Yeah, that salary.
Right? The salary is just too much. We just can't afford to go north of, you know, $10 million more or $15 million, you know, more for a receiver. You just can't with the guys that you're trying to re-sign in a year. And also with the young talent that you have, you're basically going to stunt the growth of Jalen Reagor. You're going to stunt the growth of Devontae Smith because you have this target, this safety blanket, and Julio, and every quarterback, just like Megatron, will throw this guy the ball every single time, especially Hurts being a young quarterback who won't know how to distribute the ball properly. And usually a young quarterback finds his best target and he locks in on him more than not. So, the Falcons gave up the sixth round pick back. So a second and a fourth. So thanks for that correction, Jeff. But I still think that's too much. The second and the fourth, I still think that's, I don't think the picks are too much. I think that the contract was too much. Contract, and I think that where the Eagles are, that it wouldn't be beneficial for the team long term. So we're poor right now. We're broke.
It's crazy.
We're broke. I mean, we can't afford Julio. We're broke.
And I think if the money situation, even if it was a little bit more than we could afford, I think the benefit, even though I still stand by my words last week that he would have definitely helped in the locker room. He would have helped in that receiver room. He would have helped. I do think in some ways it would have hindered the young guys' progress, but I do think also in some ways, and mostly off the field, I think it would have helped seeing an older vet that's made a lot of money, that's been successful. I think having someone to kind of model your game after off the field would have helped tremendously for these young guys. But it just wasn't meant to be, man.
I think it's the perfect situation for him, though. Like you said, win now. That's what they're built to do, the Titans are. And I don't think the Eagles are built to win now. So therefore, do you spend that draft capital and also go with that contract if they're not willing or ready to win now? If the Eagles were only a receiver away from being a Super Bowl contending team, it would be something different. But we are corner, you know, receiver. We still got questions at quarterback. We still got questions at linebacker. We have a long way before we're a Super Bowl contender. So, shout out to Titans getting that done. AJ Brown getting that done, who's one of my favorite young receivers. And we talked about that. I love AJ Brown. So he ended up getting that Julio Jones deal done. Now let's transition to the Eagles. Sirianni has been in the news because he preaches about competitiveness. He preaches about, you know, team unity and being smart and, you know, making the offense, you know, easy for us, but hard for the defense and all those things. And we've heard this rhetoric over and over again. And now it's being reshaped to they're having competitive competitions among the staff and the players and the coaches so they get to know each other better. These fun, like, team building type of games. Do you think this is a benefit to us? What do you think about these antics? Do you think it's just smoke screens and mirrors, or do you think it has to do anything with football? And let me just, like, inject this in there is Chip Kelly had us doing things of this nature, right? We would play three-man weaves, things that didn't have to do with football, right? We had these little games and all those things. Do you think that's more of that, or what do you think?
Yeah, you know, that's always a tough one. And I would say it depends on when the competitive game's happening, right? So if we're talking in the middle of practice, in the middle of a preparation time, in the middle of you know, OTAs, I don't like it as much. Now, if we're talking like the end of the week, you know, after you had like three or four good hard days of practice and inputting and installing and learning and all that, then I'm okay with the competition games at the end, right? So I'm hoping that, because it can't just be all football, especially this time of year. You got to have some time. You got to bond with your teammates. You got to bond with your coaches. So I'm okay with it as long as they were focusing on learning what they needed to learn beforehand, right? Okay. Learning your assignments, learning where you're supposed to be, learning how to run the route tree, how to audible, all that stuff. So as the games came after the learning, I'm okay with that.
Okay. So as long as the main thing was the main thing, right? Yes. So you're focusing on football, football is number one, and then the fun and games come after. I think that it's very, very hard to get the most competitive people in the world. And let's let that sink in to get them more competitive.
Yeah.
These are guys that are super competitive. They've come from a lot of backgrounds. Usually the same backgrounds make to the NFL. It's usually an impoverished background, a hardworking family like farmers, or somebody that was super, you know, talented, you know, that they may make that as well. Just somebody super talented or came from a family of lineage of talent. But usually it's the same ones, usually impoverished in a super hardworking family whose dad was a police officer. They were living in, you know, a medium income of $100,000. He's working, you know, overtime, whatever it is, in order to keep up his house, right? And his son saw that. It's like, man, I don't want them to struggle again, whatever it may be. So I don't think that you can make these type of mentalities more competitive. So I think that maybe you're using it to gain some type of advantage when it comes to knowing what makes them tick or getting to know their personality types as some type of psychology. But I don't necessarily believe that you're going to make a dude that's been fighting his whole life in order to not get shot or something that's tragic that's happened. You're going to make him more competitive? I doubt that. That's just my mentality when it comes to that.
I like that. That's a good point.
Yeah. So a few weeks of OTAs, right? So they've had no competitive drills. There is no 7-on-7, 11-on-11. It's basically routes on air, individuals, different things of these nature. Do you think that they're able to be ready for the season? Think they're going to be ready for the season with this model? And also, does this help this team with a new coach? The schedule and the program that the NFL has prescribed with no contact and there's no competitive drills and so on and so forth. Do you think that this was beneficial for this team at this state this year?
That's a hard one for me because, you know, we're, I hate to say it like that, but we're old school. And I guess if it's true that everyone in the league is following these rules, if everyone in the league is doing the same thing, I guess on paper, theoretically, it works. But, you know, it's funny, the previous question or the previous topic that we talked about was a competition, right? The games, the ultimate game is 7-on-7, 11-on-11. I mean, that's the competition part of it, right? That's where you get better. And so I struggle with the feeling that that's a better way to go about it. I personally like 7-on-7, even though we're in just helmets. I like it because there's a lot of good stuff you can learn from it. You know, placement in your body, you know, as a defensive back, reading stems, reading the quarterback. Like, there's a lot of nuances of the game you can develop in 7-on-7 and 11-on-11, just helmet type situation. You know what I mean? So it's just tough for me to say that that shouldn't be part of the game. I think definitely it should be a part of the game. In the offseason, it should be a way to develop without contact. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm laughing at Q is because most of you guys don't know this, is that offenses hate 7-on-7, right? And defenses hate it too because there's no pass rush. Like, but me in particular, I do not like 7-on-7 drills. You know, I don't like 7-on-7 drills because I'm in the middle of the field. And the linebackers, they are like at 15 yards. Like, they just keep going back because they know that there's no threat of run. There's nobody in their face. They have the read run responsibility. So they just keep backing up. So you're trying to run a basic route at 10 to 12 yards and a linebacker sitting there. And in a game, he doesn't go past 5 yards because he's reading the run. And you're like, dude, you're so unrealistic right now. Why are you playing the drill? So it's frustrating, especially for a slot receiver. So I'm laughing at Q's like, yeah, that's the competitive part. I'm like, no, that's your cheating time. That's when you cheat.
But see, no, but that makes it better for you because you know, all right, so if you're running your route, you know the guy ain't supposed to be there, right?
Yeah, I'm just you're making learning. Up stuff. Yeah, I'm learning. I'm learning how not to do it in the game. That's not what I'm learning.
That's the same thing in one-on-ones, though. See, now one-on-ones, we defensive backs are at a complete disadvantage.
True.
And nothing was worse than in training camp when we had to go to one-on-ones because all the fans back in the Lehigh days, all the fans, woo!
You get cooked. Woo!
Listen, people, don't, even if you're within in one-on-ones, if a DB is within 3 yards of the receiver when he catches the ball, that is a win. If you get a ball caught on you and you're in the area to be able to at least make a tackle in one-on-ones, then you're doing good.
That's a win. Yeah.
If you get an interception, then you probably cheated and just jumped a route that you probably will get double moved on next time.
Yeah.
Most of the time, it's gonna look ugly, and so when it looks ugly, the fans was out there letting you know, oh my god, screaming and stuff, and then of course the receivers they gotta dance and spike and do all this other stuff to make you even more mad.
And for the fans, like one-on-one drills for our positions, like skill positions, like outside receivers, DBs, it's an advantage. It's an advantage for the offense because there's no linemen. There's no defensive linemen. There's no linebackers. There's no all of these things make a difference because those are sight lines. I can just basically gunner release, meaning I don't have to release off the DB. I can just run inside and then go up the field and I still catch the ball. I'm on the other side of the field. No way in a game will I ever catch the ball in that position because there's people over there. But in one-on-ones, it doesn't matter. You know, so I would try to do something I would do in a game. The only time I would say I messed up was taking too long. Like I would take too long in one-on-ones, and before you know it, and get in the game, like, dude, he only had like 2 seconds. I've been taking 3 seconds. It's never gonna work. All right, so let's keep going. All right, so between OTAs and training camp, this is the week that I call right? Because on ESPN, it's always going to be somebody in Miami or Las Vegas. Today on ESPN, such and such got arrested outside the nightclub in Miami, you know, whatever it is. It's every year, and it's like clockwork. Somebody's going to be arrested. Someone's going to get in trouble. Somebody's going to be suspended for four games or suspended for the year during this time. And so that's what I think of during this time. What do you think about this time? That's the only thing I think about. I'm like, dude, just don't get in trouble.
Oh, yeah, that's 100%. Like that, this time right now, it's been... you're right, 100%. Every single year, it's something like that. And you know, when I was working with the Eagles, when I was the director of player engagement, that was my first time experiencing. But Doug Peterson, he wanted me to keep the rookies here, and so I'm like, what am I going to do with the rookies for like 2 weeks after the offseason program? So they stayed an extra 2 weeks, and you know, I thought it was a great idea because. What it did was, number one, we made sure that the players were eating right. They weren't going home and eating pizzas and unhealthy food 24/7. So we made sure they ate right. And then we continued with different activities. Like I'd take them one day, we'd go, you know, paintballing, and one day we'd go do cooking classes. Yeah, I was babysitting them, but but also doing things that were helping them develop off the field. So it was really good. And it was the first time. Like, I didn't get it at first because for me working, like, that was a little bit of off time for me, too, in between that and training camp. Mm-hmm. But keeping them here, keeping them busy was actually the way to go because, keeping them from
right? Because you know it's going to happen. And doing that, during this time also, you got to think about it from the player's perspective. This is the last time that you're going to be free for 6-7 months, right? It all depends on how good you are. You know, it's the last time that you're going to be free. So everybody's trying to do everything to get their last minute vacations in. Yeah. Your wife is like, yo, we got to see the family over here. You got to do this. And that month time, you've traveled 4 or 5 places. You're doing everything. You have to get your license and insurance and everything that's revolved around that taken care of before the season starts, because you will have no time to go to DMV during the season. Mm-hmm. Like, so there are so many things that you have to get done between that time. And so the players are feeling like it's their last dance. It's the last time I'm gonna be able to have fun. The last time I'm gonna be able to hang out in Miami or California or Florida or whatever, you know, Vegas or whatever it is. And they sometimes go a little bit too far. The other thing too is that I've seen a lot of guys get out of shape during that period of time. Mm-hmm. I remember in training camp. You remember, Court, when Chris Clemons almost died in training camp? Were you with us then?
Yeah, I was here when Chris. when he came from over from Seattle, right?
When he came over from Seattle, like, he was negotiating his contract. I think it was Seattle
or Oakland.
It was one of the West Coast teams. But he was negotiating his contract, and so he was missing a few OTAs. And we got to training camp. This dude didn't work out the entire time, and he caught a full body cramp. And can you imagine a cramp? Like a cramp hurts. And like, when you're really dehydrated, the only other person I've ever seen, you know, the only that I knew to get a full body cramp was Brian Dawkins, because he just had so much, he had so many muscles, and he had no body fat, right? So guys with no body fat get a full body cramp, and he got one and was in the hospital for like 3 days because, you know, not working out during that time. So it's very, very paramount that you stay on your grind. Don't just sit back and go to, you know, Wendy's and eat Doritos all day. You have to stay in shape.
And like a lot of people, man, you know, they may not realize, like, when you're coming, like, let's say you're a rookie, rookies are especially prone to this. When you're coming out, you're working out for the combine, right? Mm-hmm. So you got the end of your season, then you're working out for the combine, then you got the draft, then a little bit after the draft, you got OTAs. So like a lot of time, this is the first time that they've had downtime as well. And sometimes it could be better to rest and relax for a little bit and then grind back up.
Get it back.
And sometimes it's like you got to keep going through it, right? You got to keep getting in shape. So it's really a balancing act between understanding your body and what you need, and understanding that you haven't really had a break That's why I feel like a lot of rookies, if they don't take a little bit of time off in that little time there, a lot of them get injured early in training camp because they don't give their bodies enough time to rest.
Yeah, he's speaking the gospel there, because they come from in a normal year, they come from a season to combine training, combine and pro days, get drafted, and you going. You really don't get the time your first year. And I remember getting injured in training, in OTAs my first year. They just ran me too much. It was just too much. And most rookies, not most rookies, but a lot of rookies get hurt during that time.
Yeah.
Now, because of what happens during this break, do you think coaches get paranoid? You think they're calling them up? What do you think is going on? Hey, how you doing? They're not really caring about how you're really doing, but they're trying to figure out if you're in the streets or not.
Exactly, 100%. Hey, where you at? They're trying to keep tabs on you. You know, it's got to be nerve-wracking. You know, guys are young. They're getting some money now. You know, you never know where guys are going to be. So I definitely think that it's a nerve-wracking time for the coaches.
Well, I'm going to tell you who knows where they're going to be is the drug tester. The drug tester, everybody, knows where you're going to be. The drug tester, he will call you even if you are on the other side of the world. You in Maldives, they got somebody right down the street from you standing at the Hyatt. And,
yep. Listen, hey, that's real.
And he's going to tell you, listen, we know that you have your vacation coming up to Maldives. We want to get you before, or we got somebody that's standing down the street from you. So we need to come in, knock on your door, and make sure you get this urine test.
Yeah.
And that's how it is. The NFL. The NFL plays no games. Mm-mm. And they want all of that information before you go out. And if you go out and you don't have that information, they automatically fail you. So every time you see someone with a failed drug test, that doesn't always mean that they failed the drug test. They could have just missed the drug test. And or there's a lot of different reasons, but the NFL knows where you're going to be. And the players do too. The Eagles know. No, they know. I'm a firm believer that the FBI works with all
this. I got drug tested in Vegas one year. I was I've been in the league a couple years, and I was there, just me and my wife were hanging. She might have been pregnant with our first son, and we were just out there hanging, and I got the call. And I'm like, well, I'm in Vegas thinking, you know. He's like, oh, no, we'll have somebody there tomorrow. I was like, okay.
They're everywhere. The NFL knows that.
They don't care, man. Shoot.
All right. What's the mindset of a rookie quarterback during these weeks? Like, you know, we've seen the Drew Breeses. Donovan was famous for this. And many quarterbacks have adopted this. Do you think that it's on Jalen Hurts to do the things that most of the quarterbacks do? And I don't necessarily know if it's to get better, or is it just to show let the team know that you're serious? It's one of those fine lines.
Yeah, that whole thing, I don't know.
You just came back doing the same thing. You're doing the same thing for 2 months.
Yeah, I don't know. I never got the, I guess from the outside, and I never played offense, but it always just kind of seemed like it was all for show, you know, because, you know, the guys get together. And I think it's great for bonding situations, and they get together, work out, and they go, you know, do whatever afterwards. So in that sense, I think if Hurts wants to get the guys together for a couple weeks and, you know, hang out and bond and train and do a little bit of stuff together, that's all good. There's nothing wrong with that, but it is a little bit for show for me.
Yeah. So me knowing and me having the experience of doing it. So I was going to, you know, Arizona with Donovan, and I know, and even other teams with Cam and Alex and, you know, all different types of things. I think that it's definitely manufactured by the coaching staff, right? I have no evidence, but I definitely think it's manufactured by the coaching staff. The reason there is a piece of evidence, because most of the time the quarterback's got a script, right? It's like, yo, hold on. Is your wife in the room typing that script? Like, you got a play script. It's like, yeah, we're going to run this play. Like, yo, you've been in the house on your break going over plays and you have this all downloaded, like something. So somebody
all in the spread, all in the spreadsheet, all in organized. All
Microsoft Excel. It's right organized straight down. Like, hold on. So that's one indicator. It's like somebody's putting you up to this. I do think it's good for bonding, right? So camaraderie. Other than that, I don't necessarily know if it's, you know, unless there is competition there, and then you're kind of leery too, because it's so close to training camp. But unless there's competition there, I think it's pointless, because getting more routes on air doesn't really help your timing. That's false timing.
Yeah.
Routes on air is for the confidence of the team. Routes on air is for the confidence of the coaches, and to make them look good, make you look like a well-oiled machine, right? Build confidence, because there's no defenders. You should be able to throw and catch and run a ball with ease, right? There's nobody there. When there's competition, it lets you know the real. So if there's DBs that are going to be there, and there's going to be a defense that we can tell them to play, hey, we want to see this play 10 straight times versus cover 4.
Mm-hmm.
That's beneficial. I want to see this play 5 straight times versus cover 2. Like, that's when you start to make leeway and progress. But I've never been in a situation where it was fully team competitive. There's been corners that I remember being in Arizona. It was a cornerback, Bush from Green Bay. And he played, he was a great special teams player. I can't remember his first name, but he's a cornerback there. And he's like, oh man, we want to do these one-on-ones. Rashad, we're going to, you know, can play y'all this year. And he did about 3 one-on-ones with me. I turned him, I made him fall down one time. He is like, next thing I know, 4 minutes later, that dude was out of the parking lot, gone. Right? And never came back. It was the first day. And he did not come back.
Say it ain't so.
He did not come back. I was like, and they're looking around at me like, man, see, let made the corner go home. I'm like, man, I ain't trying to.
you only had one corner and you crushed his soul and he never came back.
But you know, that's the only time that it's been. But other than that, I think it's like more smoke and mirrors. It's for the appearance that you're working hard. But ladies and gentlemen, just because somebody sweat a lot doesn't mean they're working hard. Just because they stay there late doesn't mean that they're working hard. It's all about what you do when you're doing it, how you're doing it. And I think those times were more for show, not necessarily Donovan putting on the show. More so for the coaching staff and, you know, those things. My guys are working and you know, for the media, all that stuff. Like, because I remember Aaron Rodgers really burned Drew Brees the time for we were in a lockout and all Drew Brees was workout worried in a lockout. See, I got my guys. We're not letting the lockout bother us. And they're showing all these workouts on ESPN. And Aaron Rodgers like, man, we scored 50 points and we didn't have to do all this workout.
Got him.
I got him. We scored 40. But can you imagine if we had been working out? So I'll never forget that. That was good. That was a great time.
I got a question about that, because I always used to remember seeing the group get togethers and all, and we never really did that on defense.
Oh yeah, you were jealous, huh?
Yeah, I was a little bit. I was a little bit, I'm not gonna lie. Especially when I was younger, because I was like, man, I want to be down in Florida, you know, working out with the team. Listen,
when you're a rookie and you had to go to Arizona, you don't have it like that. Like, so that's the thing. Like, so let's bring that. And you asked me a question right after this comment, Q. So when you're a rookie, right, you get your signing bonus, you fourth round, you get your couple hundred thousand, right? You don't know about Uncle Sam yet, right? Because they didn't teach you that, right? You in school sociology or something, you know? They didn't teach you about taxes and stuff, right?
FICA. So,
oh yeah, they ain't nothing with Medicaid. Yeah, like you don't know anything about that. So, you know, you get your couple hundred thousand, you're like, man, I got 200 grand, you know, whatever it is. But you don't know that it's really like 90, right? By the time you get done with the agent and everybody else, it's really like 90, right? So by the time you get to late off season, Donovan like, yo, come down to Arizona. We're like, you taking care of the flights? I'm like, all right, now we ain't gonna do all that. You know what I mean? So you like, you know what I mean? You going down there.
Donovan don't like to spend money like that.
He's smart, but you go down there on your own dime. So as a rookie, you like, I'm down there penny pinching. I'm broke as a rookie, right? I'm like, I ain't got paid yet. I'm like, man, how much does hotel cost? We're gonna get the Best Western. I'm like, you know what I mean? So I'm going down there as a rookie. So like, I said, I want you to think about this. When the rookies go down there, it's like, man, listen, I know, you know, Donovan down there. I know Brian Dawkins down there. They done made millions of dollars. So they want you to do these get-togethers and come to this place. I'm like, man, listen, I ain't Brian Dawkins, man. Somebody got to foot this bill.
That's what my question was going to be. Like, I always thought y'all was down there. So y'all work out in the daytime, and then it's like party time at night the whole night. So it was party time for the people that had
some cheat. Like, well, some of the naive ones went. Me, yeah. I'm like, nah, that's too, you know. This bank account say I got 90. I'm trying to save it.
Smart man.
Okay. But no, serious. In all seriousness, we would work out twice a day when we were there. So we would work out weights and some type of speed or endurance training. And then we would throw in the afternoon. And when I say Q, okay, it was hot, like hot. It's July, yeah, in Arizona. It's 115 degrees outside. There's misters on the street lights, right? So if you walk down the street, you get a little blow, a little something. You it's literally like a ghost town from
during the daytime,
from 10 a.m. till about four or five. It's a ghost town. Like, you don't see people, you just see cars driving. You don't see people walking around anything. You just see cars going. You see them get out, go in the restaurant. That's it. They back to the car. There's nobody walking around, nobody having a good time, no smiling, no strollers, no nothing. Right? Until it turns nighttime, and at nighttime is lit. And everywhere you go is packed. People are like, man, you know, freaks come out at night. You know what I mean? So I should have said that on the show. Lord, forgive me.
It was in Tempe, right? Phoenix?
Yeah, it was Tempe. It was Tempe.
Yeah, I know.
You exactly used the hall you down there. But let's go back this way.
Yeah, let's go.
Here we go. Sirianni seems to suggest there'll be padded practices, right? But very little tackling to the ground. Players have fought for less tackling to the ground at camp. But is this new era almost no live tackling? Is that good for us? This new era of like no live tackling, is that good for us?
I don't think so. When we played, we live tackled, but it wasn't. I don't think it was that much.
What? And,
well,
you weren't getting tackled, man.
Yeah,
that's the thing, right? You gonna make this blanket statement? Somebody's not that much. You're not getting tackled. Go ahead.
Well, I put it like this though, like, if we did have a live drill, the live drill was always at the end of practice, and it was no longer than 10 minutes. And we're talking, you know, you four plays for the starters, you know, couple plays for the second guys, and a couple plays for the third string, right? And so we're talking 10 minutes. So we're talking in a total of a 10 minute live period, which usually was like goal line or short yardage, where it's not like a high, it's not like a big, huge contact area. We're talking maybe three or four chances of like live tackling for a player, depending on your position. Now, obviously, the lineman is different. They're hitting every single play. So it's, you know, every play for the line is live. Mm-hmm. But I think taking so much of that away from the game is tough. And I think long run, the fans are the ones that are going to be
suffer
for it. You're gonna see, you know, a lot of sloppy tackling. You're gonna see, you know, I don't know, but it's tough because I don't want to cut you off.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
It seems like the game, as a defender, as a defensive player, a person that loves and appreciates good defense, I don't like it, and that's because I don't want to see games that are 55 to 65. But the NFL does. The fans do. So
the NFL does. The NFL
does.
But
for me personally, as a defender and a guy that loves good defense, I hate it. I hate it.
Yeah. I don't agree with you with that last statement. But of course I don't. But and I have different memories than you for training camp. So I remember on the live days, we would do situational live, and then we would do live move the ball at the end. Yeah. Right. So we would do like our situation, like we would go through practice. We would do, you know, our individuals. We would tackle, get ready to boot up for tackling. We would do our 7-on-7. We would do our teams. And then we would go situationals. We would go red zone. It would be live. We would go. That was always dangerous too. I hate going red zone live. Out of all the ones that for receiver, red zone live is too many bodies that tight. Yeah, tight. And them knowing our plays, it was always a little bit dangerous. And then, you know, but at the end, so there was more, and but we used to go live more frequent too.
Right.
Than they are now. So that question, do you think it's better for the game? Yes and no, because all reports, especially from last year, show that the NFL injury rate has gone down significantly from 2019. And the biggest reason is because there wasn't an off season. There was so many, you know, no OTAs, no, none of that stuff. And guys had their lower extremity injuries, right? Non-contact stuff. But overall, the game of football injuries were down last year, even though our team is always decimated with injuries. So most people that are listening to me are like, what are you talking about? Our whole team was hurt. Our whole team is hurt every year for the past 4 or 5 years.
You're right.
But overall, the game's injuries have gone down. So from that perspective, you're looking at it and saying, okay, I see why the NFL is doing this. And I see why the players have bargained for less contact and to be in shorts and not pads all the time. Mm-hmm. But like you said, from the fans' perspective, is the product, especially at the beginning of the season, is atrocious. Watch as I tell you this, ladies and gentlemen. You always see at the beginning of a season more punt returns, more kick returns, more long touchdowns than any part of the season. Guys go to the Pro Bowl at the beginning of the season before the teams can figure out and get back acclimated with tacking and angles and understanding how to do it when you're against the real offense and is not simulated or schemed up in practice for you to win. So at the beginning of the season, it's the worst brand of football. By the end of the season, it's very, very hard to run for a 50-yard touchdown. It's very, very hard to get a punt return or kick return, things like that. So I think the game gets better over the season. I think that NFL is saying, okay, our numbers are only growing as a brand. So do the fans really care about the product being bad? We know that it's bad, but does the fans care if they're still scoring 40 and 50 points or we see a kick return or a punt return? That's pretty exciting. So from the fans' perspective that are traditionalists like we are, yes, it's a bad brand. But for the newer generation, it's like Madden. It's 45 to you know, 50, whatever it is. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's just high numbers.
Tell that to the defender that don't get the practice tackling and he getting cut. You know what I mean? Because he didn't get enough chances to practice his tackling in practice, right?
You should have worked on your hands when you're little,
you know what I'm saying? You got receivers. They catching little one-on-one passes. They just trotting in the end zone, embarrassing him. He don't get a chance to get no get back, man. He don't get a chance to show what he can do.
Unless you play for the Eagles, because the Eagles, you got like 9 lives at corner. Listen, you got 9 lives. Well, I see people getting beat. All you see is the back of their jersey their whole career here at the Eagles, and they still get another chance after another chance. So maybe around the league they get cut, but not here.
Let's keep going.
Let's go right to the topics, man. We've been going already. All right, Q.
Let me.
Yep. Go ahead. Start it off.
All right. So let's see. Here's a good one. So this is from Darren. He said, "Can you talk about agents? About how agents play a role in the development of a player's career? What do they say? Promise? Do they do anything to help the rookies? And do they disappear once the rookie signs a contract?"
The disdain. The hate. So, I think agents are so avoidable, but necessary in the way the NFL is structured. There is an alliance with agents that the NFL has. That's a secret alliance that they have. And I don't like it. The reason being is because these contracts can be done through a lawyer and be a one-time transaction.
Yep.
And therefore not over time where this guy that negotiated a contract for you, and because you went with Drew Rosenhaus doesn't mean that you're going to get a great contract. Because you go with Doug Hendrickson or one of the up and coming startup agents or whatever. No, only your game will get you a contract. Now, agents are more beneficial for players that are unknown. Now, they may have a friend, a Howie Roseman, or someone that's responsible for getting the free agents in camp. And if that agent has a great reputation and they're likable and they're used to getting, you know, favorable contracts or deals that both teams feel like they want in, you may be able to get a guy in camp or get a guy signed up in, you know, for the offseason program. But if you are an established player or they know about you in college or something like that, an agent is not helping you get a better contract. Like, it's not going to be that significant when it comes to a contract. And so the way that the contract works for the player, you get paid, let's say a player get paid $1 million. The agent's fee for that is going to be about 3%, and it's 3% of that gross, right? So you're looking at that 3% that goes right to that agent right away.
Yep. Right. And 3% of every signing bonus, every roster bonus,
every time you make a new roster, that 3% goes on if that was negotiated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how that plays out. So you can imagine somebody making $100 million and he's looking at his bank accounts like, dude, why in the world am I paying this dude $3 million? You're like, I don't know why you're paying him $3 million when this could have been a one-time fee that's set up for $50,000 or $70,000 or $100,000. That's better than $1 million.
Yeah,
that's just my take. But go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. Like, if that and I like the way you put that, because you know we as players coming in, most of us just accept that that's just the way it is. Like, you want to play in the NFL, you got to get an agent. The agent got to get 3% boilerplate right there, right? You just automatically assume. And I forget there's been a couple players. he was a safety out of Florida, went to the Ravens. He negotiated his own contract. Elam, yes.
Yeah.
And Revis negotiated their own contracts. Like, guys like that need to – if I wish that guys like that would come back to the rookie – symposiums or anything like that and kind of talk or maybe have seminars and talk to the younger players and explain to them, this is why I did it. This is how I did it. This is what you can do. This is what the mistakes that I made. This is what I didn't realize. And so we can start to educate the younger players on, you don't necessarily need an agent. Like, me personally, I feel like I needed an agent. I was an undrafted guy. I had to work my way, you know, that whole deal. You've heard the story. And I felt like, for me, I loved having my last agent, Jason Shea at Sports Stars, did a great, phenomenal job. I think he did for me. I think he got me a great deal in St. Louis, and I don't know if I would have gotten it had I not had his relationships, right? So for me personally, it was a great experience. Now, I also had two other agents that I fired before, and I won't talk about what led to that, but when I eventually found Jason, who was, I met through Sheldon Brown, great guy. But that being said, if I knew that I could have made that 8 million or whatever signing bonus or whatever else without having to pay an agent, I would have done it. But I don't think that would have happened personally.
Yeah. And I had the best agent you can have in Doug Hendrickson, like, great guy. Had every Michigan player that came out during my time, from Marlon Jackson to Leon, Lamar Woolley, whatever. All the Michigan guys went with the same agent. We trusted him. He did right by us. He was great with Octagon, now with Relativity and Wiseman, on and on. Right. So they're great guys. And I'm not taking away from them being great and doing it. I'm just saying that if a lawyer can do a one-time transaction and you can pay a lawyer, even if it's a percentage of that contract one time for the contract, that particular contract, and not the life of the contract for that particular transaction, I just think that it's more beneficial for the players long term, and there's less people in their pocket. And you begin to think about why in the hell are agents so, you know, accessible, because they have to pay fees to the NFL in order to keep this pipeline going, because everyone can't be an NFL agent. You have to be registered. You have to go through their process, which means money and which means all of these different things. So we just don't, I don't necessarily trust that system, and I don't understand why the system is still in place, but that's neither here nor there.
I've heard over time though, that there are some agents that like the certain GMs and owners can't stand, because they represent so many people. And so like for me, I don't know if that dynamic exists where the owners and the GMs really like dealing with agents. So I'd like to learn a little bit more about how that plays out, because you figure, I mean, a guy like Buzz Cook, who represents so many superstar quarterbacks, you got to figure he's got a lot of power to kind of move things around the league. And I don't think that GMs and owners particularly like that. So
go ahead. The lawyers do the contract anyway. And that's the thing. So there are so many different sides to the NFL. There's the agent and the agent's team. The person that works the contract out is the lawyer. All the language has to go through the lawyer. And if we can just deal with that guy directly, but you have to have the relationship aspect of it. Gotcha. And that's where Bucks could come in. But what the agent can do with it's not that hard. When I say it's not that hard, if you're looking at people in your position, if there was a scale, this guy makes this, this is where I fit in. This is where I think I am. This is my value. And you can have a case for why you need to be paid better than that guy. That's how it is. You're just upping the next guy. So that's where I am with it. And I agree with you as well. So we'll see how that goes. But that was a in-depth conversation. Yeah. I hope you guys can see my frustration with that process. I believe agents have their place 100%. I think it's even more like when you start to deal with media personalities, and I think it's better in that situation, or your like talent, like movies, different things. Like everything is already pre-structured, is already structured in NFL. Right. You see what the guy in front of you, that like if that was made available to everyone, if the NFL really cared about the players and what the players' contracts were available, like what they were, the ballpark of what they were being made was available, the players can go and do it. But that's not available to the players, so therefore now you need and it's a ploy by the NFL. So that's why it's not so much the agent. I just think that's the NFL taking more dollars from the players.
Taking more dollars,
So let me get to the next question, Q. Logan B, my question is, when you have later round rookies who are originally looked at like situational players, at what time of the year do you start to realize they may be more than situational players? Sort of like Tyreek Hill, who was a late round pick that I imagine was probably looked at like a situational deep threat, but turned out to be an all pro. Do you see it in OTAs, training camp, preseason, regular season, or is it a little different for every player? Thanks in advance. This is Logan B.
That's a good question. I think personally that it's everyone develops at a different speed. A guy like, you know, Tyreek Hill.
Well, he has to, his situation is different. Tyreek Hill was a first or second round pick. Yeah. He just got into legal and he got legal trouble and domestic violence and those things, right? So that was his reason for being picked last. But I understand the question. Go ahead.
And I mean, it's tough. I think some people develop faster. Some people are ready for the game more quickly than others. I don't know if you can necessarily see someone in shorts and a helmet and just say, okay, he's going to be. Yeah. So, I mean, you can see and you can probably guess, but until you put them pads on, until, you know, you got out there banging, until you, you know, out there doing what you got to do to play the game, I don't think you can see it till at least training camp. Now, towards the end of training camp, maybe you can start to kind of guess, but nothing really until I would say mid-season till you can tell if someone's really going to be special, in my opinion.
I think I agree to some extent, Q, to some extent. I think certain positions you can see more than others, right? So if you're at linebacker, it's hard to get a tell because you're in shorts. You can't really engage with the offensive lineman to be able to button press and shed blocks, yeah. Right? So you can always be on the ball or something like that. But when there's a run action, you can't always see, you know, you don't really know. But I think on the edges, you can tell a lot. It's not the end all be all, but on the edges, you can at least tell, okay, this guy needs help with his releases. Oh, this guy has really bad footwork for a cornerback. You can see those things. You say, okay, these set of skills is either trending in the right direction or not. Because I've seen some guys that are dominant in OTAs and they end up being dominant in the season. But I also, again, I've seen some people be dominant in OTAs, but when the pads get on and the threat of him being really hit is totally different, right? So I think that for certain positions, you can tell a little bit more, but it's still, like you said, the end all be all is when training camp happens and you can get tackled. So in those moments and in those times, the cream rises to the top. And when it comes to being good, being talented, the cream will always rise to the top. Will always. The competitiveness will always come out. That fire, if a dude is a punk, he always gonna get punked. If a dude is a fighter, he always gonna fight. It's like that. So you begin to know that player in that that situation. And, you know, I would say within the first 2 weeks of training camp, you will know, okay, that dude there is, we thought he was going to be a situational player, but he's the real deal. Mm. You know, like, okay, yeah, we thought he was going to be, you know, this, but he turned out like, oh my goodness. You know, in the first couple weeks in training camp and cause you that first couple weeks in training camp. And then it's usually confirmed in a preseason game. Usually always.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So that's where I am with that. Q, you want to take this long distance question? Look at this, yeah. Jamie.
Hold on. I got one that was sent to me personally. Okay, all right. So this one's a good one. So I want to ask you. So this is from Tim Lomax. He says, hey, he wants to know if I know every player wants to be their own kind of special player, but were there any players that you tried to emulate coming into the league to try to mimic your game after? So when you came into the league, was there anyone that you try to not copy, but base your game off of?
So I was fortunate and I never had in the NFL. I never had someone, I had good veterans, but I never had like a Pro Bowl veteran that was also a great like leader. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't have a Brian Dawkins. I didn't have a Jeremiah Trotter or mm-hmm. Donovan McNabb or Brian Westbrook in my position. Right. And not saying that any of the guys that are in front of me were bad players. They weren't, but we were all learning together. So there was no benchmark or someone that you can tailor your game after. So, but fortunately, before I got to the NFL, I had a receiver coach. His name is Sue Campbell. Eric Campbell coached a lot of pro receivers from Ty Street, you know, Braylon Edwards, myself, Steve Breston, like Mario Manningham, a bunch of guys. He coached a bunch of guys. And I don't know how he got his hands on this tape, but he had Webster Slaughter, who was like Cleveland Brown star receiver in the 80s.
Yeah, I remember
him. And I don't know how he got this tape, but it was all of his one-on-one tape for years. And I tailored everything that I saw off that tape. It was deductive now. I would take this and say, I have to shorten this up because of timing. I had to add this because of the player is different now. Then I would be like, I can't use that move at all. Look at that dude that's guarding him shoulder pads. Why is his shoulder pads so big? Like I would be going through like if anybody can beat that dude that he's playing against right now. like he looked terrible. So you would go through and you'd be looking at it like, you know, I can take this, I can take that. And it was the best. And when I began to look at it, I was like, dude, Jerry Rice throwed a lot of moves off this dude. Like stole a lot of them, like a stair step release, stutter releases, stair step breaking patterns. A lot of stuff I used to get open on Webster solder tape, and I figured out how to do the stuff that he would take all day to do quicker. Cause that was my biggest takeaway was that this dude was getting a quarterback sack because he would be in there like this. Nobody can cover him, but he would be doing this the whole time. I'm like, dude, these moves are sweet. But how can I do it in 1 second? So, and that's what I learned that. And that he was my mentor. My coach gave me these tapes and I lived by these tapes. Like it was a holy book of football. It was that tape and it was Jerry Rice's one-on-one. Jerry Rice's one-on-ones were amazing. I had some T.O. one-on-ones, some Jerry Rice one-on-ones. And I still have those tapes. They're somewhere around here, but I still have those tapes and they're great. I don't give young players those tapes because young players, if they're not wise, they don't understand how they work in their system. So I'll take a move out of it and show them the move, but I can't show them the whole clip because the whole clip would get you cut. So that's my experience. What about you?
Yeah. That's a great story, man. I like that. You know, for me, mine was more simple. I mean, obviously, you know, Dawkins was huge for me, you know, being able to follow him and watch him closely. And I've talked about that multiple times. But another thing that I learned too is I looked at I didn't look too much at players before me, but I looked around when I wasn't starting. I looked at other guys in the league that were starters or guys in the league that were great players at the time, and I try to take things from them. So, you know, we're talking Ed Reed, we're talking Bob Sanders, we're talking
great safety play during that time, man. Great,
it was
safety play,
amazing. Polamalu. So, you know, I would look at Polamalu and the way he would time up his blitzes and the way he would, you know, play with reckless abandon. I would watch how Bob Sanders would just throw his body around. I mean, the guy was phenomenal, in my opinion, was one of the most underrated safeties to ever play.
Yeah.
I mean, he had speed. He was smart. He was athletic. He'd knock your brains out. And then Ed Reed, I mean,
he may be the smartest safety.
I've ever seen. Like, I'm talking about a guy that he would be in the middle of the field. And he would pick off a slant because he just studied film so much and he just knew exactly. And so just learning, like just picking little things from each of those players. And I'd ask stories about, you know, guys that, you know, if I'd see one of their teammates somewhere, I'd ask stories about how they watched film, what they studied, just wherever I could get some information, just kind of put together my own little mixture of these great players is what I did. And, you know, I think, and this kind of goes back to the question that we had earlier, is how do you know when someone's ready? So for me as a player, when I came in, I wasn't ready. It took me about 5 years to really develop to that point to where I had built up my repertoire of things that I could do well. And so during those 5 years I was playing special teams, I was just pulling and learning all this stuff. And then by the time I was ready to get my chance, I was ready to go. And so, you know, it's really cool, man. It's your story, the way you learned everything, my story, the way I learned everything. It's all about learning what works for you and how you can use it in the system that you're in. And that's really what it is. And it's amazing.
And I think that's a great point. And for the fans out there, a player that you love, the things that he does that you love, does not mean it's going to work in Eagles Green. Does not mean it's going to work somewhere else, because it's all about being able to develop and find out what works where you are in that coaching system. Because a coaching or a game plan or like a system makes and breaks, because there's no Polamalu without Ryan Clark. Like, you need a guy like Quinn Michael that was like you and Ryan Clark, pretty much like comparable players, right? And so you need a guy that's very, very smart. You have a guy like Brian Dawkins, you need a Quinn Michael because they're going to do instinctive things and you need somebody to be able to cover for him. And what a great, like, great time in football. And I'm a purist. I love going against the best safeties. I loved it because I was a physical receiver. I love running into people. Me and Bob Sanders had our battles in college where my helmet had black on it for most of the game. At the end of the game, I'm peeling off black paint because I'm colliding with this dude 10, 12 times a game because he was my responsibility to dig him out in the run game. And that time with Sean Taylor and yourself and Doc and Ryan and Palamalu and Lawyer Malloy and Rodney Harrison, great safety play. Like, I'm looking at the games now, I'm like, dude, these kids, like Chris Broussard, these kids just don't know how good Ryan Rodney Harrison really was. Like, you kids know, like, when he has that segment. So it was a great time. Great time.
That's awesome, man.
All right, I'm gonna ask this question from Jamie from the UK. Look, we got someone from United Kingdom.
Big time
coming around. With the current international game seemingly leading towards international expansion teams and a London team at some point in the future, I wanted to ask you guys how you would feel as a player if you had been drafted to London. And if you were a free agent, would it be an attractive option or would you be like, shoot, I'm going to need a whole truck of money to come and sign for you guys when I could just chill and play over here? That's a good question.
That is. That's a good question. I actually had the experience of playing in the UK. When I was with the Rams, we went over to London and we played against the Patriots.
Yeah,
and we got our butts whooped. It was 45-7. We got smoked. It was bad. It was a great experience. It was great being over there. The weather was a little gloomy at the time, but it was a fun experience. I think it was a little weird because I wasn't used to the soccer chants and I wasn't used, and I understand a little bit more. Yeah, like I understand a little bit more about it. And it was like there was fans that had NFL jerseys from like every team.
NFL.
But I personally I think it'd be fun. I wouldn't mind going over there as a rookie. Now, if I don't know if I would go sign as a vet, because unless I did get a truckload of money, I would go.
Yeah.
But you're talking about uprooting your family to move all the way across the pond. I don't know if I could do that. But as a rookie, I think it'd be a good experience.
I don't love the idea, Jamie. Now, I love playing in London. I had the opportunity to play in London, and we won pretty like you guys did versus the Lions. We beat them pretty badly. So I like London and I like the product and the fans are incredible. I think they need to learn more about the game because the most exciting part of the game in London is the punt and the kickoff, right? When there's a kicking play, they're like, whoa, like they're really excited, right? About those plays. So they don't understand everything about the game, but I think the NFL to me, and this is just me, and this is they're a lot smarter than I am. So I know that I'm stepping out of my expertise, but I think that the NFL should focus on a European NFL brand, right? So Brussels had a team, London had a team, Barcelona had a team, Greece, so on and so forth.
Spain,
they can have a team and they have a world championship. You have the Super Bowl, then you have the world championship. I think that would be more palatable and it'll be less expensive in travel. It will be, just think about that. Like you playing in London, but you have to fly nine times a year back and forth to the NFL. That would be tough. That was a question.
They had that with he was saying that they had that with NFL Europe. The problem with NFL Europe, it was more of like a minor leagues thing, right?
Yeah, it was a minor leagues team. Yeah.
So are you suggesting that now the NFL put enough resources into an NFL
Oh, like team, a, yeah,
a bunch of teams NFL, over there. Yeah. But when develop them to where they can compete against the NFL American teams.
Yes.
For a world championship.
Now, for a world championship.
That would be cool.
And NFL has been working on it. I have a friend that has been working with the NFL to try to develop football in China and different parts of the world. I think they're a long way away. But if you do the team in London, you got to create a way. Like, where are you going to put them? They're going to be NFCs?
Well, if the Jags, they were trying to send the Jags over there, so that would have been what, AFC South? They're
going to make some money, the AFC South. Yeah, they did that. It's a tough deal to just ask a team to fly 5 hours every time, 5, 7, 9 hours to play football games nine times a year.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's tough.
They were suggesting to, I think, the first half of all their game. This is when they were kind of throwing out the idea of the Jags going over there. So they were talking about putting it to where the first nine or half of the season will be either home or away. So it's not back and forth.
So their first 9 games are in the United States and their last. Boy, that's a road trip.
Right? So
that's a road trip and a half. And that's a lot on a family too. Yeah. And ladies and gentlemen, yes, the guys have family, and yes, there's a lot of money involved. But this is not the same mentality as a baseball player or basketball team where they're used to having, you know, week-long road trips. NFL players are with their families at night, each night of the week, and then you fly out on Saturday, play a game on Sunday, you kiss your wife in the bed on Sunday, right? So it's not long travel. So to implement that would be a culture shock for a lot of people, I'm sure, coaches and players.
Would you do it for double your salary?
More money.
I know I would.
Shoot. Show me the money.
For real.
Shoot. As a young player, you come to NFL, if they say you're going to London, you're going to Timbuktu. Like, where in London we staying at this? Yeah, you don't care. So, Jamie, that's just my opinion. I can't speak for Q. My opinion is an older, more mature, season. You don't need the NFL, but I'd have made my money, so I got a different perspective. But as a young player, they don't care where they go. They don't care. Yeah. They're trying to make it. They don't care.
Exactly.
All right, Andy, we let's get two more questions done. Q, we wrap up.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, let's see. This is from Andy S. My question is, I believe Dallas Goedert, Jordan Mailata, Jason Kelce, and Josh Sweat are in the last year of their contracts. I would hate to lose any of them. Should Howie be trying to extend them before the season begins?
You ask the question. You can answer it first too if you want. I'm not trying to pass the buck, but I'll go if you want me to. Well, I'll give you a first chance at it if you want. So, all right, you're taking too long. Okay.
You go ahead, man. I think you got this one.
So, with Howie, you can't keep everybody. As fans, we want to retire Zach Ertz's jersey as soon as possible. We want to keep him. We want to keep Brian Dawkins. We want to keep Brent Celek. We want to keep everyone because part of us, we grew up with these players. Their faces symbolize a family moment. A positive experience for the most part. And so you want to keep that going. You don't ever want that to die. But in order to be successful in this league, you can't keep everyone. Yeah. And one of these guys will not be on the team next year. We don't know if that's going to be Jordan Mailata, who's in competition with Andre Dillard. We don't know if that's going to – we do know that it's not going to be Dallas Goedert. Dallas Goedert's deal is going to be done. Jason Kelce. They've already drafted his replacement.
Yep.
And he's been considering retirement the last couple of years. So we don't know if Jason Kelce is 100% sure that he's going to be here next year. Now, it's over 50%, but we don't know 100%. Josh Sweat may be the guy that could be on the outside looking in unless he has a monster season. And if he has a monster season, you can let go of Brandon Graham, keep Josh Sweat, or keep Brandon Graham, let go of Derek Barnett. Like, you, somebody has to go. And that's just the reality of the NFL. You can't keep everyone. And one, maybe two of these guys will not be on the roster next year.
Yeah, I agree. And I agree, Dallas Goedert is
safe.
Going to be here. He's safe. You know, to me personally, I think out of these choices, Mailata is the guy that has to be here. Not just because I do think that he's going to win. I think he's going to win the job. But there's something to be said for a guy that, I don't know, maybe I have an affinity for, but a guy that kind of came from the bottom and worked his way up and earned his spot. And I think, you know, he still has a high ceiling. I think he's still young. He's huge. He's strong. He's athletic. And the more athletic and strong linemen that you have, especially on the edge like that, the better your team is in the long run, personally. So I think he's a guy that you definitely have to keep around.
Yeah, I agree with that because they've put so many resources in him. You can't turn on him at this stage after putting years worth of resources in trying to develop and making sure that he doesn't fail. And to have some success that he had last year, there's no chance that he's not on the roster this year. Just that would be unfathomable. It would be undoing everything that you have worked for after he's shown you positive progress. Like that wouldn't make sense to me at all.
It's like going to paint an entire house and then, and then selling it before you finish, right?
Right. Yeah, too much. All right, Sean F., my question to Q&A. What was your guys' take as former players regarding the Eagles going into full-on tank mode the last game of the season? Did it offend you as competitive athletes, or did you understand the logic behind it?
Oh, man.
I'm definitely avoiding this one. No.
So I'll put it this way. The only good thing about that was seeing all of the Giant fans' tears after they didn't make the playoff. Like, that was the only thing I loved about it. I would take and bottle up all those Giant fans' tears and try to sell it. That's how much. No, seriously, no. To me, that was tough to watch. And as a competitor, it's something that I don't know if I could have done. And the teams that I've played on, the teams probably you've played on, you know, I suspect that they'd be out there making their own calls. Like, if you call a play that doesn't seem right and you call another one that doesn't seem right, whoever the OC is, I would suspect that, you know, Donovan or Mike Vick or whoever would be like, no, we're not running that. Like, we're going to do this, because it's very hard to win in the NFL. It's very hard to get to the NFL, let alone, you know, stay, right? And so you have a short amount of time in the NFL. You have a short amount of time to win games. And every game matters. Even if it didn't matter in the long run in terms of making the playoffs or whatever, it matters. And you go out there to compete. You put your life on the line every single time you're out there, every single play that you're out there. And so the tank job, for me, I totally disagree with it. I totally and I don't think that it was just Doug's doing. I think that there was more to it than that. I think it came from definitely above him. And I think the whole situation just really stinks. And me as a player, I don't know if I could have, you know, gone back after that. That was rough, man.
That was really rough. And being there last year, from my perspective, Sean, I know that it wasn't just the Doug thing. Doug preached the entire week until Friday. So from the first time meeting till Friday, it was, we're going to beat the Redskins. We're going to beat the Redskins. We're going out there to give our best shot. We're giving this. And then on Friday, all the receivers were in and Nate Sudfeld is taking reps. And I'm like, let's give. And it was like mid practice. Like, we gotta give Nate Sudfeld some reps just in case. Like, since when does the backup quarterback take reps in practice? Not unless it's with the scout team. Hmm. So I'm usually like at the end of practice, I work with all the players, do my thing. And next thing I know, I'm headed in. Nate's like, yo, can you catch Jay? Can you catch for me? It's pouring raining. And last thing I want to be sitting out there catching balls in the rain from Nate Sudfeld, and I ain't playing in the game, right? So I'm out there hour after practice catching every ball in the rain. He's like, man, you should play. You catch good in the rain. I'm like, yeah, no, I catch good in the rain, but I ain't playing. But anyhow, to get back on point, I'm like, dude, this dude's about to play. And sure enough, goes out there and plays. And I'm like, that's not Philadelphia Eagles. Mm-hmm. As long as I've been around this organization, the one thing that you can never say about this team is that we are quitters. We may have been out-coached or out-played, schemed up, came out flat.
Yeah.
But this team has always had energy in the fourth quarter to make it a game, has always Miracle in Meadowlands, three of them. Yeah. Just a fighting spirit that comes from the fan base. And that there was as weak as you possibly can get from an organizational standpoint, from organization standpoint. And it made me cry because at that point, it's too many people that have put in too much work coaching. Like I have tapes of every receiver, all of their individual reps and trying to figure out ways to get them better from doing individuals. Every game, film, the stuff they do right, they do wrong, analyze it, the players they're going against. I got DNA tape of every DB that they've ever seen. Going down to seven deep sometime, guys that are on practice squad. And guys are putting in hours. You know how long it take me to compile those tapes? Each week it took me a minimum of 7.5 hours to get those tapes each week. Just on those tapes, not coaching. Just to get those tapes ready for those guys. Wow. So when you putting in that type of time, effort, and energy to try to win ball games, and then you go out there and give one away, it pisses you off. And yeah. So that's what I'll say about that. I'm with you, Sean. I didn't like it, and talking about it right now is making me mad. So yeah, let's move on. Let's move on. And we're going to – matter of fact, that's kind of a sour note. Should we answer one more question?
Well, yeah, let's get it, because I'm ready to start boxing. Ready to fight. Let's go. Let's see. Last one.
Yeah, Derek.
I got this one. All right, okay. This is from Dedrick. Yeah, this is from Dedrick M. I'm looking to get into coaching at high school this upcoming season. I'm only 24, never coached, but I played and I feel as though I have pretty good understanding of the game. What kind of pointers or tips do you have for someone looking to get into coaching for the first time? As a coach, what are some things that I should prioritize?
I'm going to let you talk because you're in coaching now, but I'll say this before is that I would say, go to the local high school, local college, volunteer time, learn as much as you can, and show your value that way. Listen, you got two ears, one mouth. Listen way more than you speak, because coaching a lot of times is, are you willing to be led, and are you willing to be a team player? Because everywhere in America, we're designed to be the boss. Everywhere. Your friends are always asking you, you know, when you're going to get a raise, or when are you, like, the job that you go for, once you go for the manager position, once you go for, you know, CEO position, you got to be a boss, you got to be self-employed, you got to be self-made, social media, you can't be, you know, a role player, you got to be a star player. It's so ingrained in our culture. Everyone's a self-help coach or a life coach. It's so ingrained in our culture to be the one that's in charge. Sometimes coaching is seeing if you can fall in line and be a good teammate. The coach that's at hand, noticing that you're not about yourself and that you're about the team and that you're willing to listen, that you can follow instruction, is probably the best thing that you can do starting off as a coach.
Yes. 100%. Yeah. And I mean, that's 100% right there. And I will add to that. And it's very, very simple. You know, the X's and O's part of it, you know, obviously that's a huge part of the game, and knowing how to teach the game, and knowing how to, you know, teach how to play the game safely. But, and this is the very, very simplest thing that everyone that coaches, especially at the high school level, needs to understand. And I know this from experience. You're a high school coach. My advice is just understand and realize that your interactions with this player, all your players, they're going to take with them for the rest of their lives, right? Whether that's good, bad, or indifferent. I still remember my Skip Raich, my high school head coach, Marty Johnson, offensive coordinator, and Rory Derry. Rory Derry played in the NFL for a little bit, and he played at Oregon. I went to high school in Oregon. I'll never forget, he came back and taught me a lot of stuff. He taught me the game. And, like, that's part of the reason why I'm going back and coaching now, is because, you know, back then it was so cool to have a NFL coach me and teach me things and stuff that I never thought I would learn at that early of an age. And so, and I look back at my life, and those are three guys, and my dad coaching me growing up. Those are probably the four guys that I think about when I think about football and the game, right? So just think about your reactions with your players and how you want them to remember you in the future. Do you want them to remember you screaming at them over stuff that probably don't matter? Or do you want them to remember you teaching them the game the right way? Do you want them to remember you teaching, you know, that it's not necessarily about making that tackle? Yes, you want to make that tackle, but I'm going to teach you how to make that tackle, right? So now when you're a head coach in the future, you're teaching the game the right way. And so, like, it's really simple. It's so many people get lost in the wins and losses. And, you know, I'm a state champion. I coach a state. It's not about that. It's about teaching this game, about relationships, about having fun, and making sure that your players grow up to be good men, making sure your players grow up to be honest men. Men that your daughter would want to marry. So, like, that's the way I look at it. And if more coaches looked at it that way, we wouldn't have a lot of the crazy stuff that we have going on. Simple.
That's facts. That's facts, right? So if, I don't know, I think that's good advice. And we didn't talk about, you know, the X and O's, but those are just, to get you in the door, those are things that all coaches are looking for. And I think that'll help you out a bunch. I don't know. I may have said 2 ears and one nose or something like that. Did I say 2 ears and one nose or 2 ears and one mouth? I couldn't. When I was explaining, I couldn't. But anyhow.
I missed that.
I could have said that. I got to look at the tape. See. But I think that's great advice. Just know that you have to put your time in knowing what you're talking about and being able to disseminate information and break it down to a place where players can understand is key as well when it comes to the X and O's, because you can be a very, very smart guy, but not know how to bring it down. And usually players that have some experience, not necessarily NFL experience or college experience, but if you have some intimate knowledge of the game, you've played it, you've been around it for a bunch, you will learn how to inspire and how to communicate with the players. And every player is different. And we'll say that, and that's it. But for the Q&A show, we always try our best to get under an hour. It's very, very hard for both of us to get under an hour because both of us are long-winded. I know I'm very long-winded.
I'm long-winded too.
And we enjoy our time. And we appreciate the time that we have with you. We're doing this out of the love of the game, and we have fun doing this. And it's great to see Q all the time. It's great to talk to Jeff before the show, and Hunter and Adam when we did our round table with us four. That was like a great experience. And us trying our best to better our craft here on podcasts and being analysts and those things, these guys giving us this platform, we're grateful for Inside the Birds. All the fans that are tuning into the show, we appreciate what you guys are doing and the feedback you're giving us. So we want to say thank you guys. We really appreciate you guys from the bottom of our hearts. We have fun doing this. And make sure that you check out the show tomorrow, Wednesday at 6 a.m. It will drop on Inside the Birds platform on YouTube, also Amazon Music, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Email your questions to insidethebirds@gmail.com. We are signing off for today. We had so much fun with you guys. Q always has the last words. Q, say something for the people.
As always, man, it's been a pleasure. I love you guys. Love the support. Continue to support us. Shoot us the questions. And let's keep having fun with this thing, man. It's been awesome, Jay.
Peace.